やめてたまるか。お前と俺は濡れたからさ。
一生かけた
一度の絆、心配するな、
泣いてだけの最高だって。ずっといつまでもずっといつまでも殴り合って照らし合って。
Welcome back, everyone, to the Dr. Keith Christmas Show, and we have got probably our biggest interview ever in the history of the show, a very topical interview with one of my favorite wrestlers, Mr. Wrestling, Kevin Steen. Kevin, thanks for coming on the show. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. It's very flattered to hear you say one of the biggest interviews on your show, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You're certainly bigger than Giant Tiger, who I'm sure you're familiar with.
You guys had him on the show?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's been on a couple of times.
Really? I wasn't aware of that. That must not have been very coherent.
The first one was very coherent and hilarious. The second one, I think he had partaken in some a thing or two before the show.
The first one might have been before his drinking problems. Right?
Yeah, we've had a few interspecies wrestling guests. Those bad boys. They almost created a couple of international incidents and racism lawsuits when they came onto the show.
I have no doubt.
But Kevin, it's great to have you on. Obviously, you're big time in the news at the moment, coming off Final Battle, the big match with El Generico. Loser leaves town versus loser gets unmasked, and unfortunately you lost and you've had to leave Ring of Honor. So first of all, just about the feud in general, it started a year ago, and as everyone's talked about, it's just so rare these days for a feud to go that long and build like yours did. And how pleased were you with how it turned out and the impression it left on Ring of Honor fans?
Well, I'm really happy because everybody who's seen it seems to feel that this was something special, which is what we set out to create. Like, this first came about maybe mid-2009, I'd say, when I personally started to feel like, as fun as a team that we could be, and as good as the matches were that we were taking part in, I felt like we could be doing something more fresh, because I've always believed that if wrestling starts falling into like a routine, which is how I felt with our team, because we'd been teaming for so long, it just gets boring. Even if the matches are awesome and everybody's working their asses off, if it's just always the same thing you see, it just gets boring. So I started playing around with the idea of turning on them and where we can go from there. And I knew that we could. Like, I knew we could do something that could last a long time and grab people's interest for a long time and have countless fresh matches if we involve, like, other people to help us out, which is where Caban and Carino came in. Originally, it wasn't going to be Steve because he wasn't back in Ring of Honor. We were actually talking, I talked to Nigel McGuinness about filling that role of my partner. And he was really into it, but then he ended up signing with WWE and then TNA, so that didn't happen. So when Nigel left, we were, I was like really racking my brain trying to figure out who could take his place. And then as soon as I saw Steve announced his return on Ring of Honor Wrestling, the website, I immediately asked for him to be put with us. And it all worked out great because I really don't think, as good as the feud was, based around Generico and Cabana and myself, I don't think it would have been the same without Steve, because I thought Steve added an element that we wouldn't have had with anybody else.
Yeah, for sure. And so, you knew Steve from, like, he would have got you on your tour of 01 that you did a few years ago, so you go back a long way with him.
Yeah, it wasn't really a tour, it was just one show, but it was just an incredible experience, and it was all thanks to him. I wrestled him in November of 2004, in Quebec City. A local promoter brought him over and asked me to wrestle him, which I was psyched to do because, back in the late 99, early 2000, when I started paying attention to ECW, it was a little late at that point because it was about to fold, but that's when I really got into ECW. And as soon as I saw Carino and his old crew with Jack Victory and Rhino, they were the best part of the show for me, and Steve was the highlight every time I'd watch ECW. So he became my favorite wrestler, with like Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels, all-time favorites. So So when I got to wrestle him in 2004, I was really, really happy to get to do that. And after the match, he told me he'd like to bring me to Japan. It was such an honor to have a guy I looked up to for so long say that he thought he saw something in me, and that he, you know, in a way he was willing to put his ass on the line a little with 01, because at the time he was not really running it, but he was a big part of it, and he was in the office, and he was willing to try to help me out. And then a couple months later, he brought me over for a match, and it was just a blast, and I owe him a lot. And after that, we kind of lost track of each other, just because that's how it is in wrestling. We talk once in a blue moon, and I ended up wrestling him in what I thought was his, well, he claimed was his retirement tour in 2007. He came to Montreal for a show, and I asked the promoter at the time, who I didn't know and had never worked for, to be put in a match with him, because I really wanted to wrestle him one last time before he was done with wrestling. And I was in the match, and that was the last time I saw him until he came back to Ring of Honor. So having him as my partner this time and for a whole year was just, honestly, if this is the last thing my career is remembered for, I'm really happy that my feud with Generico is it, and the fact that I got the team with Steve Corino and just our chemistry together and all the stuff we put out on DVD and video wires and on HDNet. I'm real happy that that's gonna be the last thing people remember from me.
Yeah, and I think I'll be the first to admit that when you were paired with Corino, and Corino hadn't been around in so long, I and a lot of people were like, this is a bit odd. I don't see how Corino fits into this. But then once you actually started seeing the promos and seeing the chemistry you guys had, and it was like, oh my God, this is something special here that they're doing. And it was really quickly into the feud that I think people really, really, really got into it. And the Toronto iPay-per-view was, I guess, the first big match between you and Generico. And I think at that stage, people thought that might be the blow off. And as that was just something to keep the feud going, and it was a great match. And then it went another 6 months. So what was that kind of, did you from the outset, I guess the question would be from the outset, did you see this going the whole year? Or did you think maybe initially Toronto iPay-per-view, we might end it there?
When I was pitching this to people before it even started, I told people, this will go from final battle, not like that this was the plan, but I told them I personally believe that if we did it right, it could go from final battle 09 to final battle 10, and by the time we get to final battle 2010, we'd be main eventing. I truly believe that. I kept telling everybody who was involved that we could capture people's imagination, and I had just a lot of faith in everybody involved, and I had a lot of faith in our ability to make this something people would remember and make this something people would talk about. And I mean, if I rely on the feedback that I get, it's definitely something we achieved. But at the same time, Death Before Dishonor in Toronto, it could have been the blow off, because some people wanted it to be the blow off, and I fought that. We all did. To me, it was just getting started. I mean, I guess we could have ended it there, but it wouldn't have been as memorable as it is now, that everything that's happened has happened, and that we've put all the matches together, and that I think once you watch from, you know, Final Battle 2009 to 2010, you just have it's a long story, but it's a really good story, and it just wouldn't have been the same if we'd ended it 6 months earlier. But, you know, it would have been a good place to end it. It was 6 months to the day after I turned on Generico originally, and Toronto was a great place for Ring of Honor, and the fans are so amazing there. But at the same time, we were just one big match on a show filled with big matches, which we were at Final Battle 2010 as well, but, you know, that show was more revolved around the whole feud and the whole history, and it was in the same building where I turned, and it was just the history was there. So that Before Dishonor ended up being just a tool in the, you know, that we were going to use to make everything bigger. And I think it worked out great. And I also think it was, honestly, through all the years that Generico and I have wrestled, I think that was probably our best single match ever. It was the one that we enjoyed the most, I think. And I think a lot of people loved it too. It's just, it kind of gets overlooked, I think, just because it was, like I said, on such a stacked card with the Briscoes and Kings of Wrestling's crazy street fight, and Omega versus Daniels, which rocked the house, and then, of course, the main event of Tyler versus Davey, which is a match people still talk about now. So, but I really love that match, and I think when people look at the feud and as a whole, I hope they look at that match as one of the highlights.
Yeah, it was the opener of that show, if I remember right, and it set the show off.
Yeah, I actually pushed really hard for that to be the opener, because I figured if we're going to be in a spot where people will remember it, with all those other stacked matches, it's going to be to kick it off, and I knew we could kick it off like nobody else could, so it worked out really great.
And another match that happened around that kind of same time period, which was definitely one of my favorite matches of the whole year, was yourself and Carino against Cabana and Generico in Chicago, a Chicago street fight. And it was a war, to say the least. And were you really happy with that match, how it turned out? And people's reaction to that one, I think, was quite favorable.
Yeah, everybody loved that one, and I really liked it too. But to be honest, in this one, Steve stole the show, and I think everybody agrees, from wearing a completely white suit to just...
Yes.
Just his attitude throughout the whole match and his the punishment he took and just giving it his all in that match. To me, that's... Like, if anybody is doubting how good Steve Carino can be at this point in his career, just point to that match and tell them to watch this, and I'm sure they'll come back saying, well, I'm wrong, you know? I really liked that match, I did, but I think I prefer the HD Net Street fight that we had a couple weeks later to that one.
Oh, really?
Because they were both kind of similar, but I feel like the HD Net one was just felt somehow wilder to me, which I know a lot of, like, pretty much everybody prefers the Chicago one, which is fine. I want everyone to enjoy every match we've done for the whole thing, but I think I prefer the HDNet one. And if some people remember the HDNet one and have seen it but, you know, don't really agree with me, I'd say go back and watch it again. I just had a blast during that match, and I think everyone else did too. But like I said, the Chicago one I was really happy with, and everybody is saying it was one of the wildest things they've seen, which is great. That's what we set out to create anyway. So, hey, pick a favorite and stick with it. That's fine with me.
You mentioned HDNet there, of course, and I gotta ask, when you're doing this whole feud throughout the year, you're kind of going back and forth between the TV sequential kind of storyline and the DVD live events, and it's hard to keep it all straight, I guess. But which side of things did you feel advanced the feud better? Did you prefer doing it on like the DVD live event tapings or the TV shows?
I personally, when I was trying to come up with stuff and thinking of what should happen where and just thinking of the story in itself, I didn't consider TV. I felt like almost TV was a separate thing because of the timing and the way it's taped. I couldn't I really wouldn't want to be in the shoes of like Dave Lagana and Delirious and Jim Cornette at this point, and back then Adam Pearce, because they have the horrible task of making everything work out timing wise. And like in my brain, I would try to figure out ways to make things time out, and I just couldn't figure it out. So I just gave up and figured, well, I would work for the house shows, because ever since, I don't know why, but ever since I started Ring of Honor, I was obsessed with trying to have matches and have my role on the show, make sure that whatever I did would sell DVDs. I don't know why, but that was always my goal. You can ask people that were working with me at the time, or Pierce is a good example, because that's all I would tell him, is I want to have a match that's going to sell DVDs. And that's all I want, is I want people to, I guess because I love DVDs, I have a ton of wrestling DVDs, and this is how I go back and I watch stuff from years ago, and they still create emotion in me. I think that's why I feel like I want whatever I do to be immortalized on a DVD so that people can watch it and want to buy it and watch it years after and still think, well, that was great. So I always built everything around in my head around the DVDs and the video wires and the stuff that people could go back and watch countless times, because on HDNet, especially now that they don't let whoever was uploading it on YouTube upload it anymore, people, you know, have to watch it on TV and then it's gone. You can't really go back and watch it unless you have it on your DVR. But I just feel like DVDs was just a better way to immortalize everything. And when I would think about the feud and everything we're doing, I wanted people to look back on it for years. So I concentrated everything, and the big parts of the story I always made sure that were told on DVDs, because I knew they could get that footage and put it on HDNet later, but the footage that we did on HDNet would not necessarily be available to everyone. So that's how I thought about it.
Yeah, that's real interesting, and I think I absolutely understand what you're saying. I can't imagine just how hard it is to keep all that straight. Like when you were saying about what like Cornette and Lagana and all those guys have to do, and I was just like thinking from the Louisville taping we did a couple of weeks ago, and how like that was all stuff for after Final Battle, and they had to kind of get that all straight without giving away kind of what happens to Final Battle.
Exactly.
And stuff. It's really tough. So I think the approach you took was probably the best route to take with it, and it certainly worked out well.
Because I also felt like the Ring of Honor fans, the diehard fans, and the hardcore fans, which is who, although Ring of Honor is always trying to cater to a bigger and wider audience, I personally felt these are the people I owe something to, the people that follow the shows from the start and have been following Ring of Honor for years. And I think a lot more of those have access to buying DVDs on the website because everybody in the world can do that, but not everyone in the world necessarily gets HDNet. It's getting better, and it's getting more widespread now, and the network is getting more coverage by cable companies and all that stuff, but it's still not as wide as the possibility of people to be able to just buy the DVDs and watch the show. So I felt like keeping everything, like the major parts of the angle for the people that get to watch it on DVD and on the video wires and the diehard fans is just the way to go, just because I felt like I owe that to them. I don't know if that makes sense, but.
It definitely does. It definitely does. And so everything, of course, built up to the big match at Final Battle, and the promotion and everything going up to this match, like it was just perfect. There was so much hype leading up to it, and I think everyone was looking forward to seeing this match. And I think a lot of people as well didn't even know how it was going to turn out. Like I think probably in hindsight, everyone will say now that there was no way Generico was going to lose his mask. But like there were times where I legit thought Generico's losing his mask, and I had a conversation with someone who was over at a show in England, and he was someone that had worked on a lot of the shows that Generico had been on over in England, and he was just like, there's no way he's losing the mask, it's just not going to happen. I've seen him without his mask, he's not going to be like that. And I was thinking I can see it happening, but as it turned out, it was of course you losing and having to leave Ring of Honor. And before we move on, I want to give you the opportunity just to clarify that you're leaving Ring of Honor, and this is not, in fact, you go get knee surgery, as it was reported on this website. So I will give you the opportunity to clear that up and tell everyone kind of what the deal is with that.
Well, yeah, like you said, I'm not going anywhere for knee surgery, and I'm not taking time off. And it's not just a storyline. I'm done with Ring of Honor, and I hate it, but I mean, I obviously am not in control of that situation. I still feel, in a way, it was the perfect ending to Generico and I's story, which is fine with me. That's probably the only redeeming part. I'm healthy. My knees will always give me trouble, and I don't think any surgery could fix it, so I'm not going to bother getting any. I need it, but I've learned to work around my knee injuries, and that's not the reason why I'm not in Ring of Honor anymore. And I'm not quitting wrestling either. I'll keep wrestling for the companies that want me, and I'll keep wrestling till I have fun with it, and once I don't anymore, I just won't. I'm really looking forward to going back to PWG on a more regular basis.
Awesome.
I went there last month, actually, and I wrestled Tozawa in what I think was probably my favorite match of the year, not necessarily my best, although I think it was really good. But and a lot of that credit goes to Tozawa because he's amazing, and everybody knows, everybody's been hearing about the matches that he's been putting on over there with Hiro, for example. But I'm just really looking forward to just going back to PWG, because I'm sure a lot of your listeners know that as far as fun companies and just companies that for the best wrestling, PWG is at the top of the list. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to working more with C4 down here in Ottawa and NSPW, which is in Quebec City, all around me. And another great part about that is that I get to stay with my family now on weekends, which is I love. So, you know, it's not all negative, but, it kind of sucks. I'm not going to, lie or anything. I wish it wasn't the case. That's all.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans kind of feel the same way. I kind of gauged the reaction a bit to be sort of when you lost and people kind of realized, oh, this is for real. He's actually leaving. And a lot of people were like, this is bullshit. Why are they getting rid of Steen out of Ring of Honor? And it was, I think it caught a lot of people by surprise because everyone kind of looks at the year and like just if you want to pick an MVP for, I'm not trying to lick your balls while you're on the air with me, but if people want to pick an MVP for Ring of Honor for 2010, I think your name is going to be at the top of most people's lists. And just for everything you did, like from character wise to the matches themselves, it's just it doesn't really make a lot of logical sense why they wouldn't want to keep you around. But
I appreciate that, and all I could say about that is I don't think it's necessarily I don't think it's anything against my wrestling or anything. I know that a big part of it is that I don't care. I'm just gonna say it. I've gotten into trouble a lot this year with just stuff that I've been doing that they didn't necessarily want me to do and that they were telling me not to do, but I just felt like that wasn't the way to go. Like, you know, things like touching fans and like just the hardcore stuff we were doing, and I broke a couple cameras for HGNet, which was a huge deal. Not that I personally took them and broke them, but, you know, accidents happen. You know, people report that it was a budget cut. I don't think that's really the case. In a way, it is because, you know, a lot of money came out to fix the stuff I did, I guess. But I talked to that with the people that mattered, and I think it just comes down to, you know, it's flattering for people to say that I'm MVP for Ring of Honor this year, but the people that, the people in charge don't see it that way, I guess. So that's what it comes down to. I don't want to dwell on it because there's really no point, and it's just something I gotta get through. And now I'm at peace with it, and I've known for a little while, and I made my peace with it, and now I'll just move on and just be the best I can be elsewhere.
Well, it's time. Yeah, as you said, it's onwards and upwards. So I think you've got the best attitude to have about it. It's just kind of look forward and then not look back at it. Like just to look back on the fact that you did have the perfect ending to leaving there as far as creatively. And like that match was just, you can just maybe talk a little about how you feel the match went. Like I've said, defended that match to anyone that's criticized. Just it was exactly what it should have been. It was perfect way to blow off that feud. And it was absolutely crazy. And I love that match. And was it what you envisioned? I guess would be the best question to ask.
Well, I thought it was great, especially the end was exactly what we were looking for, and people got it, which was really important. You know,
The commentators did a good job reinforcing that. I think they mentioned.
I thought so too. I was honestly, I was a little nothing against the commentators. Just you know, a lot has been said about Ring of Honor commentators, and a lot of it I agreed with, as far as their enthusiasm on the microphone and stuff like that. But I felt for that matter really point on, and Kevin Kelly being a part of, like, being half the announcing team really helped out. And I thought Prazak was doing really good, too, relating back to the story that we told for a whole year. And I was hoping that when I was on my knees in Generico, that chair, that everybody would be transported back to 2009, and they all did, it felt like. And the end, I'm very, very happy with. Maybe the match could have been better, but I think every match could be better, and we could have done some things differently, but in the end, we didn't, and I watched it for the first time yesterday from beginning to end because I watched bits and pieces after the show just because, I don't know, it was almost like a grieving time for me just because I was starting to realize that this was done for now, and this part of my life was done, and I couldn't just bring myself to watch the whole match, but I did yesterday, and I really liked the whole thing, and the fans were there, which is a testament to them, because they had seen so much at that point, and we were following Davey versus Roddy, which was amazing, so everybody's there, everybody was watching, and watching the story we were telling, and they were behind us 100%, and I really love it, and I'm always going to look back on it fondly. In a way, it's kind of bittersweet because, you know, I kind of put the last nail in my own coffin by doing it. But I'll still always look at that match fondly, and the feedback I've gotten from the fans is just, it's heartwarming.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that, I guess, wraps up the whole talk about everything in the last year, and I really appreciate you being kind of open and everything about that, which is really cool. So now I kind of want to take everything back a good few years, and Kevin Steen breaking into the wrestling business, and of course your early days around men such as PCO, who we talked about in great detail recently on this show, and I believe you did a little training with Jacques Rougeau too, and I don't think your opinion of that was as favorable as your opinion of training with PCO. So
I did most of my training with Rougeau. PCO only came because I started training before Rougeau even. I started training in 1999 when I was 14.
Wow.
I was actually 15. Yeah. No, sorry. 1998. I was 14. I was training in a barn near my house. I'd been bothering my parents for years already, ever since I was 11, and I'd seen like WrestleMania, I think it was 11, with Shawn Michaels versus Diesel. Don't ask me why, but for some reason that match made me want to be a wrestler. If I watch it today, it makes me want to quit, but whatever.
you realize you get to hang out with people like Pamela Anderson. It was just like, oh, I'm in.
Yeah, maybe that was it, yeah. as soon as I saw that match, I tried to convince my parents to enroll me in wrestling school. First, they didn't know where the hell was a wrestling school, and two, they thought I was too young, which is true. But then when I was 14, my mom heard of a wrestling school around where we lived, and she signed me up, and it was actually in a barn outside. And I did that for a month, and the training was decent from what I remember. Nothing crazy. They were teaching us the basics, and it was I honestly can't remember the name of the trainer. But he had been around the local wrestling scene for a while, and he had done some stuff internationally, and he was good enough to train. But then the barn collapsed on a ring one day that there was no training. So that was it for that wrestling school. And then a year later, Jacques Rougeau opened his wrestling school, and I saw it on the internet, and I immediately asked my parents to go check it out, and we did. And I was in Jacques' first class, PCO only came to help out like 4 or 5 years, like 2-3 years later, because they had a falling out dating back to the WWF days. And the training with Jacques at first was good, but quickly we saw the way he was just as a person. He's just not a very good person. That's all it comes down to. I'm sure people who know him can probably attest to it. And like an example is I met Mick Foley a couple of years ago, and when he asked me who trained me, I said Jacques Rougeau, and he said, oh, I always felt when I wrestled Jacques that I was dealing with a used car salesman, and that's pretty much a great way to describe him. But as far as his training was concerned, I don't really have anything negative to say about it. It's just the way he ran his school and his promotion was not something I agreed with, but at the time I didn't know any better because I was just a kid that wanted to wrestle, and he gave me a ring to do it. So a couple times a week I'd go over there and just try everything I wanted to try and train with other wrestlers, which was good enough for me. But then when I started to want to wrestle more and gain experience, the way he worked was he had his own promotion, and all his students who were on his shows weren't allowed to wrestle under companies, the local companies, because he only ran once every 3 or 4 months, but when he did, because of the name recognition he had locally, he would get like 2,000 or 3,000 people. And he felt like that was a privilege to students to wrestle in front of that many people when all the other local companies that would run, every month would get, 200 people. He felt like that would cheapen his students if he let them wrestle elsewhere, but I saw it as a way to gain experience, and he disagreed. But eventually he let us do it, and that's when I made my debut in IWS and other places around the local scene. And then a couple months later, he decided he was going to take it back, and he didn't want us wrestling other places anymore. But by that point, I was in love with IWS, and I was in love with wrestling every week, just because I felt like that's what I needed to do to get better. So he tried dangling a WWE tryout in my face as a way to keep me in his wrestling school, because at the time he was featuring me as his top wrestler, and I was much smaller back then. I could do all the high-flying stuff and that I still do, like the moonsault and the 450 splash and stuff like that, but back then it was just every match. That's all I would do because that's what he loved. And I decided that, I knew I wasn't ready for WWE, that they would take a one look at me and laugh. And I liked what I was doing, and I felt like wrestling more and as many places as I could with as many guys as I could was the way to go for me. So that's what I chose to do. And we ended up parting ways in, like, November of 2003, and I haven't spoken to him since. So.
And
sorry about that. Go ahead.
As you told me a couple of weeks ago, Generico actually didn't train with you there. He came along later. So tell us about meeting El Generico for the first time and your first impressions of him.
Well, I first saw him during IWS shows because when I was training with Jacques, I would go see the IWS shows, even though Jacques didn't want us to go see the shows. Even he would try to keep his students from even watching other wrestling because he felt like it was beneath him. Yeah. But, a couple of us snuck into the IWS shows and watched them anyway. And I remember seeing El Generico, and back then he had the octagon mask, and his he would, like, paint on his chest, Olé, and with, like, black marker. And he just looked even more ridiculous than he is now. And I didn't like him at all. I mean, that dislike for his, for El Generico, the character, just comes from the first time I met him, to be honest. I just didn't like I knew he was a great wrestler and he could go, but I just didn't like his old shtick, I guess. But it was a couple months after I first saw him wrestle that I met him personally, because he and a bunch of other IWS wrestlers came to the Jacques Rougeau show that I was on, and that's how we met. And I don't know, meeting all those guys and seeing them wrestle is what made me want to get to IWS, because at the time it was really the hot place in Montreal to wrestle, and they had shows every month, and it might have been only 250 or 300 people in the place, but they were crazy, and they were just into what the wrestlers were doing, and they knew wrestling, and that's what I wanted. That's the kind of wrestling I wanted to do. So I got into it, and immediately, from the start, I was paired off with Generico. Like, I don't know why. People just saw us as a natural pair, whether it be as opponents or teammates. So it started in 2003. Our first match together was in September, October of 2003, and we just had our last one for a while, I think, in December of 2010. So.
Wow, and I remember seeing some of your, I think it was in, what was the name of the promotion? It was like
EWR was another big one.
EWR, yeah. I remember seeing you guys wrestling in I think it was a Generico PCO match as well. I saw on the same thing, and I was like, "Wow, these guys are!" I'd been hearing the names like El Generico and Kevin Steen, and I wanted to check you guys out. So I watched these matches, and I was like, "Wait, these guys are really good." And I guess it was your big four way in CZW. You traveled down to the East Coast, and that was what really kind of broke you guys out onto like the sort of East Coast indie stage and getting hype on the internet and all that kind of stuff. And tell us about that four way match. It was you guys, and who were the other two in that? Was it Sexy Eddie and Arsenal?
Sexy Eddie and Excess, actually.
Excess, okay.
Yes. So that came about. I mean, in a way, Generico and we owe all of our American success to Sexy Eddie, because he went to Tournament of Death in 2004, along with the Arsenal and I think Green Phantom. And he, a lot of people I'm sure are aware of what happened. He got a cut in his arm that actually touched his artery, one of his arteries.
Wow.
And he, or was it a vein? Either way, it was just something that bleeds a lot. And he was in another state of mind, he says, because, I mean, I've talked to him about this, the incident that I'm about to mention for countless times. He was in another state of mind. He saw the blood flowing from that cut and he realized he could squirt it if he kind of clenched his fist. And he decided to do that into his own mouth.
Oh, Jesus.
Which was insane, especially back then. Just the craziest thing I ever seen. And the look in his eyes when he does it is just so insane. But that was immortalized, and everyone who saw it were just, whether it was negative or positive, were like marked by it and remembered it and would talk about it. And that made people want to see more of IWS. So a couple months later, CZW contacted IWS and asked for four guys to come and have a four-way on their Double Heather show in September, which we would be on the night show, and they had another four-way, the SoCal four, they would call it, on the day show, which was Excalibur, Super Dragon, B-Boy, and Bobby Quantz. To be fair, we were actually booked in the States before CZW by Jersey All-Pro. They, I guess following along the same lines, they had heard about what Eddie had done and wanted to see what IWS had to offer. And a guy who used to write the press releases for IWS and work for IWS at the time, Lacor was his internet name, Michael Ryan's his real name, had sent Jersey All-Pro some stuff, and they were interested in having us, so they booked a couple of us for their 7th anniversary show. So that was really the first place to give the IWS guys a chance, but the CZW show we were booked on ended up being the week before Jersey All-Pro. So everybody credits CZW for breaking IWS into the scene, but really Jersey All-Pro needs a bit of credit too. But CZW is where we had that four-way, and I remember we were there for the afternoon show, and we watched the SoCal four-way, and we knew that we for sure would be compared to that match. And I got to say, we were just nervous, like nervous wrecks, because that match was awesome.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what we were going to do, and we decided to go out there and just do everything we could to just wow people. And when people
look
back at the match, I've heard people say, well, that match was just crazy, and a lot of it doesn't make any sense. But I don't think if you watch the crowd during the match, and even if you watch it yourself, I've yet to see one person say that match sucked. You know what I mean? It was just, it might not be the best storytelling. It might not be the most sensical stuff we're doing out there. But, God, as far as having fun and just a party, that was it. And that's what helped us get our name out there. And, after that match, Generico, Eddie, and I all got booked for CZW on a regular basis. XS did a couple shows, but ended up not going back, I think, just for personal reasons. But that's really what gave us our start. And then Jersey All-Pro the next week helped out, too. And we got to, you know, meet Super Dragon and talk to him a little bit. And I don't think he liked us very much after that first four-way.
You still does he. You stole his thunder.
Yeah, kind of. I think, to be honest, he told us that's exactly it. Once we became friends and we would talk about it, he told us, I didn't like you guys because you guys had a better match than us, which was a huge compliment. And,
I know Excalibur is still raging to this day about it.
But, yeah, in the end, it worked out because I feel that's what we needed to do to get our name out there. And like you said, it worked because this is where we've come since then. So, but I really recommend that match to anybody who just wants to see a fun, just fun wrestling match and who hasn't seen it. I think everybody would enjoy it.
Yeah, it was on TV over here on the wrestling channel. On the wrestling channels, probably maybe maybe a month or maybe 2 months after it happened. And I remember seeing it and being like, holy shit, this is crazy. And I probably didn't watch it for a few years, and then I remembered there was that crazy match I saw on CZW back when I used to watch the Wrestling Channel, and then I saw someone going on about, I think CZW fans, something they were talking about, like, oh, the awesome Canadian four-way match in CZW, and I was like, oh yeah, that was that match I saw. So this was about a year ago, so I decided just to track it down again and rewatch it, and I was like, whoa, this totally held up. Like you said, it's like people will say, oh, there's no story or whatever. But that's not the point of the match. The point of the match is just it's crazy, fun, just mind-blowing match. And that's what works.
You also have to put in perspective where the match was being held.
Yeah.
I mean, this was CZW. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This wasn't a place where you're going to get, the Bryan Danielson classic on any night. So
if you guys went in and tried to, quote, tell a story, they probably would have shit on you.
Exactly.
They wouldn't have cared about your story.
That's it, exactly. They don't, I mean, especially back then, I don't even know what CZW is now. I know there's a couple people robbing banks, apparently, but I don't know what they're up to now, but I doubt it's changed much. CZW was always just about train wrecks and fun matches. And we put both on at the same time, I think. So we did what we had to do, and it worked out. I don't regret it at all.
Yeah, I had a question coming
in. And also, if people want to see Kevin Steen skinny, that's the place to go, because I haven't been in that kind of shape in a long time.
I got a question from someone asking if now that you're not in Ring of Honor anymore, are you going to take up robbing banks to fill your time?
No, I think I'll stay away from that. It's not working out too good, apparently. And I don't have, I don't have any kind of scarf to hide my face or anything like that, even though I guess he didn't see fit to using it, but whatever.
That's a shame. Okay, you mentioned PWG. That was where you went. Super Dragon brought you in, and if you guys were starting to make a name with the CZW and JPW stuff, you really, really made your mark in PWG. With you got to do, of course, the big feud with Super Dragon, leading to the Guerrilla Warfare match, and just that was if people thought the Generico match from the other day was crazy, this was right up there as far as craziness goes. And you also had a couple of really great matches with Generico there, which I think really got your name out there more. And thoughts on just PWG? I get the impression it's a promotion that's quite close to your heart.
Definitely. It's my home in the end. It always will be. I've had a lot of homes in wrestling. IWS was one of them for a long time, and Ring of Honor definitely was too, but PWG is probably the one where, rarely do you go into a company and feel like it's almost like you own a part of the company, even though you don't. And I felt that with PWG. Like, I felt like what happened to PWG, and I still do to this day, even though I'm not there. I'm not there as much. I still keep, for the years that I wouldn't go, I'd still keep up with everything, and I'd read the results for every show, and I'd read up on what people thought of the shows, and I'd talk to Excalibur and Super Dragon about, what went on and how the show was, and, what's going on, and how's everything with just the business in itself, because I always feel like that's a part of me, and without PWG, I wouldn't be where I am now, and it's definitely close to my heart, like you said, and it's also a place where I had so many good times, both in the ring and out, because it was just like a big family, and it's changed a lot, but guys like Bosch and Quicksilver and those kind of people and Top Gun Talwar have all left now, but still, they were replaced with a lot of good dudes and a lot of good wrestlers that just, there's something about PWG and its crowd that makes you want to work your ass off and just blow the roof off all the time, which I think is why people look at PWG as being such a fun and good company. And I, countless times I'll read about people who don't spend money on wrestling except for PWG.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what it is about it. It just feels like if PWG was a person, somehow it would be your friend. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just, it's the big friendly
cool.
Gorilla.
It's just fun. That's it. It's an endearing place, and it's definitely very close to my heart, for sure.
And someone we were talking about just before the show, Pac, you had an awesome match with him. I think you had a match over in England with him first, but then I don't think I've seen that one, but I saw the rematch you guys had in LA, and that match was so good, and that was coming off the heels of Pac's great matches with Generico. And how did you feel that one stacks up as far as your PWG matches?
I love that. It's probably one of the top ones there. There's a couple matches that when I think back to PWG that I just love. There's that one. There's a match with Chris Bosch for the title from All-Star Weekend. There's the Guerrilla Warfare with Dragon. There's another, the me versus Super Dragon from Bola, and the first Bola, and my first match with Generico at Free Admission. There's a lot of matches, and the match with Pac is one of those that just stands out in my mind as being a good thing I did in PWG. But a lot of the credit goes to Pac, because he's amazing. Everybody knows what he's become now. And I wrestled him in England, you're right, in a four-way with, oh my God, his name is escaping me now, Ashley Reed, maybe? Something like that?
Maybe.
And Takashi Morishima.
What? Because you were a Shiva?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a four-way. It was originally slated to be a three-way, but then they had to put Morishima in because he's champion of the local company, not IPW, where the match was held, but another company. I forget what its name is. And I guess he had to drop the belt because he was going back to Japan. So they put him in that match, and it turned out to be a lot of fun. I remember actually somebody... a fan later on when they reviewed the match said that it reminded them a lot of the CZW four-way. from IWS, from the IWS guys. So it was a lot of fun, and that's where I first met Pac, and I had heard a lot about him before going to England because of all the stuff he was doing. And I remember when I wrestled him thinking, well, he's got a lot of work to do, but he's really good, and he's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And from that point on, I tried helping him out, and then we went back for another tour in England. This time Generico was with me, and he wrestled Pac, and we actually had a three-way, me, Generico, and Pac on one of those shows, and that was it for us. We and just from those a couple of months from that first time I met him to that those shows, he had improved immensely, and I knew he would just keep getting better, and so did Generico, and then we tried to help him out. Generico talked to PWG about bringing him over, and they did, and then I talked to Dragon Gate when I was over there about bringing him over, and they did, and now he's one of the best, and he's just having great success everywhere he goes. So, and that's a testament to him, because he was born with the talent, and just a great wrestler.
Now that leads us on nicely to Dragon Gate, and as I'm sure everyone knows, I could probably talk to you for about 6 hours about Dragon Gate, but we'll try and get it in a bit quicker here, but
right.
You went over on that tour, and I think people may not be maybe surprised to hear you were in fact a muscle outlaw on that tour, Kevin. Yeah, you're hitting the gym hard with Gamma and Yoshino and the boys. And
right.
So yeah, what were your experience on the tour? Did you get I remember listening to an interview with Jimmy Rave where he talked about how he got the Mochizuki treatment when he went over to Dragon Gate, which is basically you wrestle Mochizuki a bunch of times and he kicks the shit out of you, and then if you prove you can take it, they start like treating you with more respect and stuff, basically.
I did not get that. I think, to be honest, Sima told me that Jimmy Rave, at first, I'm sorry, my phone's having a bit of static.
That's fine.
Jimmy Rave at first was seen as kind of just a pretty boy by the Japanese crowd and the Japanese wrestler. So I think maybe that's why they gave him that kind of treatment. And
you weren't seen as a pretty boy? That's ridiculous.
No, not at all. Somehow they put me muscle outlaws, even though I don't have a lot of those either. But I think they just the fact that I was bigger than all the guys there was just a natural fit to their heel group. And then,
yeah.
I mean, I came in and they immediately had me killing guys. Like they had me the first night running on Tozawa Juku and destroy all of them. And I remember telling them what I was going to do and seeing those dudes like worried about what I was going to do. And then they made me, like in the afternoon when everything was set up and it was just the wrestlers, they made me give Stalker Ishikawa the package pile driver just for the hell of it, just so people can, you know, see it. And no, they treated me amazing right from the start, and they really pushed me, and they did everything they could to put me over strong. And, I mean, they had me killing guys like Yamato in like 5 minutes. I mean, it'd be different today if I went back, obviously, because he's grown up to be one of their top guys, but they just did everything they could to have the Japanese fans see me as a threat and someone not to be messed with, and it worked out, and they put me against guys like Tenryu and Liger, not in
matches,
but I got to work with those guys who were legends. So I have nothing but good things to say about Dragon Gate. I didn't end up going back for various reasons, but the door was always open for me to return, and they've always been nothing but nice to me. They actually, when I was over there, I was slated to go back for a second tour, which didn't happen, but they had like a tracksuit made for me, like a Dragon Gate tracksuit with my name on it. And then since I never went back, it was sitting in their office for 3 years. And at PWG, when I wrestled Tozawa, he brought it for me.
Oh, wow.
So I have nothing but good to say for them. And it was a great experience. And it taught me a lot about a different style of wrestling that I wasn't, you know, familiar with. And now I think it helped a lot into my return to Ring of Honor as well, because if any company in the States kind of, maybe not at this point anymore, because people in charge of change things a little or are changing the way things work a little, but back then under Gabe, that if any company in the States embodied what Dragon Gate would do, that was Ring of Honor. So I think me learning that style and getting better at it helped me out once my return with Ring of Honor. Like, I know Gabe has told me he saw me in Dragon Gate and figured it's time to give him another shot and see what he's got, and it worked out because I was a regular there for 4 years after that.
Yeah,
so I think Dragon Gate was instrumental in me going back to Ring of Honor, and I have nothing but good to say about them. The only experience I can think of that would resemble the Jimmy Rave Mochizuki treatment is actually it involves Mochizuki. In one of the matches, we were doing a lot of six-man tag. It was maybe 2 weeks after I'd gotten there. I was wrestling. It was me, Gama, and God, I don't know who the third one was. I don't remember.
Doi or Yoshino, probably.
Yeah, probably Yoshino. Or actually, maybe it was me, Doi, and Yoshino. I think that was it. Against Mochizuki, Susumu Yokozuka, and K-Ness, I want to say. Maybe not. I'm not sure. Anyways, I did my somersault leg drop on Mochizuki, and for some reason ended up landing ass first in his face.
Oh, wow.
And I knew immediately something was up because I turned around and saw him roll out of the ring and whisper something to Susumu. And I'm like, okay, I gotta expect something. And we had done the same match a couple days earlier in another town, and we were basically just doing a lot of very similar spots, and I knew it was coming. We had done it a couple days ago where Susumu just lariats me, and I just take it, and I don't bump, and I just no-sell it.
Yeah.
And a couple times he's supposed to do this. And I remember how it felt a couple days before. Now I'll tell you how it felt. A couple days before, it was strong lariats, but, you know, I could take them, and I could stay up and still, you know, act like they didn't hurt, even though they were killing me.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you how it felt this time. I saw Mochizuki whisper something to Susumu, and then it was time for the lariat spot. First lariat hit me, and it was literally like a lightning bolt went through my entire body. He hit me in the chest, but somehow I felt like my spine, my lower back, was going to break.
Oh, my God.
And that was one. I knew there was two more coming. The second one, same thing. But at that time, I literally felt like, I don't know if I could describe it properly so you would picture what I'm trying to say here, but it felt like if I didn't try to change the way I was absorbing the impact, that my top half would just fall backwards and my spine would break. And then
wow.
My legs would just stay. You know, it was just disgusting pain. I didn't know I could get hit by a human being so hard. And then he gave me a third one, and thankfully, that was the last one because I wouldn't have been able to stand after. And then as soon as he hit me, he gave me an exploder suplex, which is good because I was about to fall, but he caught the exploder. It felt, I don't know, I can't really describe it. It felt like maybe a top Major League Baseball hitter hitting me in the chest as hard as they could with a baseball bat.
It was disgusting.
And I tell everyone who asks me what the most painful thing I felt in the wrestling ring was, that is, oh my God. Maybe Mochizuki gave it to Jimmy Ray, but he was responsible for what happened to me with Susumu. And after the match, Susumu came up to me, he's like, thank you. And he said, today, lariat may be harder. And I said, maybe. And then I walked off to go cry in a corner. But besides that, they always treated me great, and that was just part of, you know, that's just part of wrestling. Just stuff like that happens, you know.
You'll be happy to know that I was at a show in September where those two wrestled each other in singles, and they beat the shit out of each other. At one point, I was like sitting like second row, and I think it was Mochizuki. He does that kick to the back where the guy's sitting on the apron, and Susumu falls out in front of us, and he just looked up right in our faces, and he goes, "Oh, so stiff."
I was actually never a victim of that Mochizuki kick, but I would be second to Gama, and Gama was working with Mochizuki a lot during that time, so I saw that kick like five times in person. And I remember being thankful that every time we worked Mochizuki, that kick would not be for me. It's just, oh my God. Just these guys, they're machines. You know, everybody knows they're machines. They train together. They live together. All they think about is wrestling, and all they think about is how to get better and how to be the best at wrestling. And they achieve it by just being crazy motherfuckers, you know?
Yep. So you mentioned how that got you back into Ring of Honor, and you say back into Ring of Honor because you were initially in Ring of Honor in about 2005 for maybe one or two shows. You wrestled Homicide. It didn't probably go as you would have liked, and you ended up not being there then for 2 years, but you eventually did get back in, and you had that match with the Briscoes, I think February 2007, to kick off your huge feud with them, and What was that whole experience like? Were you hoping to get back into Ring of Honor that whole time and just kind of really pushing for it, or was it just something you're like, it'll happen when it happens?
Well, excuse me. Yeah, sorry. The first run, it definitely didn't go as we planned, because we felt, Generico and I, that once we went to give Gabe tapes at a show, and then he called us a couple months later and said, okay, I'm going to give you guys a couple matches, and we thought, that's it, we're in, you know? Because we felt that was natural progression. We started in IWS, and then we made our way up to CZW and Jersey All Pro, and now PWG, and then Ring of Honor. It's perfect. That's just the way it's supposed to go. But it didn't work out that way, and I can't really put my finger on what didn't work. I know there's a lot of contributing factors. For instance, at that time, not so much anymore, but at that time, I really think the Ring of Honor fan base thought they were hot shit. Like, they thought they knew what good wrestling is, and they know what good wrestlers are, and they dictate what happens. And they, I think, saw Generico and I as just not good enough for Ring of Honor. And, you know, just because we didn't look exactly like wrestlers should, or what the typical wrestler looks like. And I think that was right away, something against us, like strike one. And then strike two probably came when I asked Gabe, how should I be in the ring? Like, what do you want me to be? Should I be more babyface-ish, heelish? He said, oh, don't worry about character, just wrestle. Well, I mean, that's just not something that works for me. I'm not, I'm not Bryan Danielson, and I'm not Davey Richards. I need to put a lot of myself and my character into matches to make things fun, to make things different than the rest of the card. And, I think I'm a decent wrestler, but a lot of my appeal is my wit and my comebacks and my one-liners and stuff like that.
Orchestrating the crowd.
Yeah, just playing along with the crowd because, a lot of people pay to be entertained. So wrestling, like a great wrestling match, is entertaining, but everybody has their different strengths. And I think one of my strengths is to make people feel like they're part of the show. And I was told not to do that, so I just went out there and wrestled, and it just never took off. It just didn't. Also, I don't think we were ever booked in a situation where they wanted us to steal the show and be all we could be. Like, Generico got a couple good matches. He got a match against Broderick and Aries and Homicide, but, every time was just, he was just enhancement talent to them. It was just a nice little match, but then they kill you. And me, I was booked in, like, four ways, and fucking Vordell Walker, which is horrible. And at the time, Gabe even apologized for that years later, saying he thought Vordell Walker was going to be something special, and he wasn't. This guy was horrible. And I had to wrestle him twice, too. I wrestled him in CZW a couple of years ago when I made, like, a one-night return. I don't know how the hell that worked out, but it's just the guy, a nice guy, and I don't want him to rip my head off if he ever sees me again, because he probably could, but he's just not made for wrestling. And just that match didn't connect, and it's just, we had, like, six matches there, I think, and every match I was involved in just wasn't anything special, so in the end, I just think a lot of it was not the right time for us because they weren't ready to let us showcase why we were highlights of other wrestling companies. Like PWG gave us, carte blanche. We could do whatever we want, and just the important thing was when we're done, people are going crazy. And we did that every time. Ring of Honor, at that time anyway, everybody had a role, and our role was to just warm up people for the main event that's going to happen later. But now we could probably do it a lot better than back then, because back then we were still we're still learning today every time we wrestle, but back then we were learning a lot and learning the pacing of shows and the way things should be. But back then our strength was that we could go out there and just do crazy shit and have people going nuts, but that's not what they wanted us to do. So I think a lot of it was that, and then it took a year and a half, almost 2 years, to get back there. And when we did, the difference was they told us, you guys have 15 minutes with the Briscoes, go nuts. And we did, and the rest is history.
Rob Naylor was getting in Gabe's ear. But yeah, so you had that match with the Briscoes, and yeah. It was awesome. And I remember for Generico wearing the Tito Santana shirt for some reason, which is kind of ironic that one of the things was you guys didn't look like wrestlers, and then in your big combat match, Generico wears.
I'll be honest with you, that's actually something that drove me crazy for years, and we've talked about this in the past, me and him, because one of the big knocks against me was that I wrestle with a shirt on, right?
Yeah.
And even in Ring of Honor, Gabe, before he booked me, told me, the only thing is you can't wrestle with your shirt on. I'm like, all right, fine, whatever. And so I went there and, you know, had a singlet made so I looked like a wrestler, and I didn't have the shirt on and whatever. And then when we came back, I was in my singlet, and he had his shirt on. The reason for the shirt was that he had a skin infection that was given to him, I think, through many guys having it because of the uncleanliness of Ian Rotten's fucking rings. Like, so one guy caught it and then gave it to somebody else, and then Generico ended up catching it, I think from Roderick Strong. So then he had it, and he didn't want to pass it off to the Briscoes, so he had to wrestle in a T-shirt. And nobody, not one person, commented, except you just now, and this is years later, commented on the fact that Generico is wearing a fucking Tito Santana shirt. But I wear a Kevin Steen shirt, and I'm a yard tart. Anyways, that actually drove me crazy for years, so I'm glad you brought it up. But yeah, that was the reason for the shirt, and yeah.
Yeah,
it just went under the radar for everybody, though.
And that match turned into a huge feud between you and the Briscoes.
Yeah.
There was a match, I think it was in April, where Mark was like, had a concussion, so it was basically you guys against Jay, and then Mark makes mm-hmm. a big comeback. I loved that match, and that was where you basically just turn into full-on, like, badass mode, prick heel, start killing mm-hmm. them. Start killing them. Generico's not really with you as far as that, but he has your back, and I thought it was this awesome dynamic. It turned into quite the war, and you guys had probably about five or six big matches during that year. Obviously, we'll talk a little bit the latter war in a minute, but of the matches that kind of preceded that, was there one that stuck out to you as really just one of your favorites?
Well, I love the original match, the first one of the 7-year festival, 5-year festival, I should say. Was it 5-year? I don't know.
Yeah, it was 5, yeah.
So, right?
Yeah.
I really like that one, just because there was so much writing on it, you know? Like, to me, Ring of Honor, it was like the one that got away at that point, you know? And I remember when I was over in Dragon Gate, I saw Generico was booked for Final Battle, and I wasn't. Gabe hadn't asked me, and this is after I had done, like, I had asked Gabe about possibly coming back, and he would always give us the line of, yeah, maybe if I have something, I'll see, and then he would never get back to us. And then I did the whole thing with, when they were doing the CZW versus Ring of Honor, I decided I was going to, because at that point, I didn't give a fuck about CZW, because they didn't give a fuck about themselves. I was Iron Man champion, nobody cared, nobody put me in title matches, they weren't doing anything, the whole feud, the whole Fed was just it was just a travesty, just a big joke. We would go there and wrestle in front of fans that, we could have wrestled in front of empty chairs and wouldn't change anything. And I couldn't blame, like, at the time, maybe I was a little bitter towards the fans, but I shouldn't have been, because who the fuck would want to cheer when they pay hard-earned money to sit through what CZW was giving them? Like, you know, some matches were good. Some matches, they had guys trying, but most of them was just a bunch of guys who didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And didn't care. So when you see 7 matches with guys that don't care, and then you see a good match, it's hard to get, you know, it's hard to care at that point. So I didn't care about CZW, and I decided that if they were going to do this feud, I was going to make myself a part of it, so that hopefully Ring of Honor would decide they were going to use me again. And I decided to be the CZW guy who wanted to go into Ring of Honor. So I decided on my own, without asking anyone, that I was just going to go on the mic and beg Ring of Honor to take me back and say that if they did, I'd gladly throw the CZW Iron Man title in the trash. And I was doing this on their own show.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, as entertaining as it was for the CZW fans, because that was actually getting some good reviews from people. They thought it was funny and they thought it was good. And then CZW ended up writing it with doing a little thing with me and BJ Whitmer representing Ring of Honor, even though I wasn't in it, against Super Dragon and Necro Butcher, which led to some pretty good matches. One of them, that actual tag match, Dragon and Butcher against me and Whitmer from, I think, April 2006, I want to say.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good match, and they ended up using it to their advantage, but even that didn't get Gabe to bring me back. So I was a little disappointed, and, you know, eventually I got to the point where I was just like, oh, fuck Ring of Honor, it doesn't matter, I'm in PWG, and I love PWG, and now I'm going to Japan, and everything's fine. But then when I saw Generico was getting booked, and, you know, it stung a little, just because I felt like I could still bring something to that company. And I felt like it was the one failure in my career, Ring of Honor, and the way it worked out. So then when Gabe decided that he was going to bring me in, he made it clear that that match with the Briscoes was a one-time thing, and if we did good, maybe there'd be more work. So it was a lot of pressure. And to
Feud wasn't planned at that point?
Absolutely not.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It was a one-time thing. Actually, I think he was planning on booking Generico more already, but he told Generico at the time that we're going to give Kevin a try, hopefully he does good. But he made it clear that this was not, that didn't mean anything. But he gave us the leeway to go out and do what we do best, and we did. And to knock it out of the park the way we did with all the pressure that was on it, you know, that's why it's one of my favorites. But all the matches we did with the Briscoes, I really loved. A lot of them were overlooked, I think. Me versus Mark Briscoe was a singles match. It took place in Boston at the
Final. Yeah, that was an awesome show. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, awesome show. And I think that show has Generico versus Seidel as well.
Yep.
And Jay Briscoe fought Morishima on that show.
Yeah.
And my match with Mark is one of my favorites ever, just because it's kind of like I always relate my matches to the CZW four-way just in terms of fun, because I just feel like wrestling should be fun. That's why I loved it from the moment I saw that WrestleMania show I was mentioning earlier. I love when wrestling's fun, and that match was fun, me and Mark Briscoe, and the street fight we had in Boston the following show after that.
Amazing
a lot
match.
Of fun. And I thought the Manhattan Mayhem 2, the 2 out of 3 falls, was fun, although we should have gotten a fall on them. I think that was a big, big mistake on the booking team's part there, because they ended up getting us 2-0, but I really think us getting a fall on the Briscoes at that time would have been huge.
Because they're building up the Briscoes, like winning 2 straight in every match, so if they did the thing where you guys were the ones to get a fall off them, it would have made your feud seem that bit
definitely
extra special.
And then they ended up wasting their whole storyline of the 2 straight, because they had Rocky Romero and Roderick Strong beat them for that one fall, and nobody cared, because it wasn't part of a feud, it was just a throwaway match, which I didn't understand, but that's besides the point, it's years ago now. But I felt like that match was really good, and maybe slightly overlooked. Like, I don't think people ever hailed it as anything amazing.
Did it go right after Danielson Morishima, or was it right before?
It was right after, yeah.
Right after. I think that's probably just everyone thinks
probably,
Danielson Morishima.
That match was really, really amazing, too, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, so many matches that were just a lot of fun. Me versus Jay Briscoe in that Lights Out match I really enjoyed, and just, like I said, everything that came out of us versus the Briscoes, it was a highlight of my career for a long time, and it still is, just because it was the embodiment of what I think wrestling should be, and that's just a lot of fun. And then it led to the original Ladder War, which was a huge deal at the time.
Yeah, I legit think, and again, I'm not just saying this, I legit think that's the best tag team feud I've ever seen. I really think that had everything you'd want out of like a feud between two teams. It had the awesome matches where they branch out into singles against each other. It had the different sort of stipulation type matches. You had the cage, you had the ladder, the street fight, and they all worked. And did the match in April, which I mentioned with the awesome story of Mark having to come over the rail and all that. Just it was
special, because that's where we really established. And again, we didn't even know. Like, I don't even think a feud with the Briscoes was planned at that point. It was just that match in Edison. But that's really where the characters of Steam's a fucking asshole, and Generico, he likes Steam, so he's trying to stick by him, but at the same time, he's got a good heart. That's really where we established that, and I think that's where Gabe just decided, well, you know, we've got to run with this because it's working. So I think that's really where the feud was born. I don't think any concrete plans were made before that night.
Now, I know I promised you we'd try and get this done in an hour, so we've already gone a bit over, but I just want to throw...
You know what? I expected that, though. I talked to you, so that's not a problem at all.
Awesome. Well, we'll try and get in a couple of questions that people have... not to turn this into This Is Your Life, Kevin Steen, but sure. I've reached out to some individuals, colleagues, and people you may have come across during your career to throw in some questions. So we've got Excalibur wanted me to ask you, very simply, did you... after your match at Final Battle, did you make amends with El Generico by offering him a pickle?
No, I didn't. And you could tell him. I knew he'd bring that goddamn pickle. No, I did not. I kept my pickle. And if you talk to him soon, you could tell that I'm saving my pickle for him.
Awesome.
Him at BWG. All right.
Mike Roch from Interspecies, he asked you to talk about yellow cheese.
No, I don't want to. I'm freaked out. That's actually the basis for crazy Kevin Steen that people love so much, the character that people say I play so well is I have this quirk. I just can't stand yellow cheese, like processed cheese. It's a borderline psychotic thing with me where I hate it. And I've gotten so upset at people putting that in my burgers when I specifically asked no cheese where... Like, I thought I was going to kill
that that horrible plastic McDonald's yellow cheese.
Yes,
nasty.
Yes, that. Yeah. But, I mean, it's not even just yellow cheese. Like, I can't stand egg yolk, the yellow of the egg. If it's cooked, it drives me crazy. Or mac and cheese. Like, I'll fight people if they try to get me to eat that or try to get it anywhere near me.
That's interesting.
I don't know why.
Dr. Keith, one of his questions was, what's the inspiration behind your characters and your crazy promos? So
I
guess
can't
you have
say
the answer.
That's the inspiration, but I think it's you know, the seed is there from that because it makes no sense.
So a little
I get very, very upset and I get kind of out of control because of it. So
wow. Speaking of interspecies wrestling, if you were to go there and wrestle, is there any of their crazy characters that you'd like to get your hands on?
Yeah, well, I'd love to wrestle Giant Tiger because we've been trying to make it happen for a long time, and I just think it'd be very entertaining to just play off of each other. And I'm pretty sure he's still the champion.
He probably is. It's quite the reign of terror.
And I really want that belt because it's the nicest belt I've ever seen. It's just so awesome looking, and I want it. So, yeah, Giant Tiger is definitely the top of the list for that.
Yeah, and I could probably make that happen because I don't know if you know, I'm actually an official member of his league. I'm his Irish whipper.
Oh, well, you got to work on that then.
Yeah. Let's see. We have Jubs, who you may know from your trips to PWG. Sure. He has asked me to ask you about the time an animal escaped from LA Zoo while you were there.
It was right before a PWG show where my son pinned Excalibur. before that show, me, my wife, and my son went to the zoo, and our visit was cut short because a wild monkey escaped from his cage, and they made us leave. Which at first I was upset about for a couple reasons, because at first I felt I was the perfect person to try to catch the escape monkey, and two, I didn't want to leave. But then when we walked out, they gave us free tickets for the next time, and then we went back a couple months later for free. So it all worked out. But, yeah, it was pretty crazy seeing because we could notice people running around that were working with the zoo, and we didn't really understand why. And then we came to a point where this guy on a bicycle, and he had, like, a megaphone. But he looked like an idiot because he was in, like, really short shorts and this tight shirt, and he had a huge mustache. He was just going around his bicycle saying, "Leave the zoo, you need to leave. A monkey has escaped." And it was a completely crazy scene. And then I went from there to a PWG show, and that just seemed like the perfect fit somehow.
Did you ever hang out with the monkey in Dragon Gate? Because I know
Matt
Slidell is a big fan of that monkey.
I'm going to go ahead and say that I think I was probably the monkey's best friend for the time I was there. And I think I was one of the only guys that actually got to approach it and have a friendly relationship with it, because I have pictures of me holding its hand and petting it and just posing with it. And I've seen and heard of countless incidents where he's bit people and tried to hurt people. And I remember before I got there, I heard of something where Azrael was sleeping in the dojo and woke up to the monkey on the bed next to him.
Oh,
staring
God.
At him because
oh,
he got free of his leash, which he was at the time attached to. And yeah, so I heard negative stories about that monkey all the time, but to me, he was nothing but cool. I mean, yeah, he would throw shit at you, but only if you pissed it off, which Jack Evans was very talented at doing.
So I heard.
But I really like that monkey. I have a couple pictures of me and her, actually. She's a female. And yeah, no, I was down with the monkey.
Yeah, the he escaped, and that's the whole thing where people always rope Shingo into the Shingo beat the monkey Dragon Gate thing. And it was actually he posted a blog how the monkey had escaped just like from the zoo, and he had to literally go into the street chasing after the monkey so it wouldn't like attack any people, and he had to like bring it back to the dojo. So just like I think that's the funniest visual ever, just Shingo chasing the monkey down the street. Let's see, a few more from Dr. Keith here. He asked about how come when you and Kendrick teamed up, you didn't have a cool name? I guess like the cool name you had in your, what was your team name with you and Chris Sabin? It was something amazing, I remember.
I was pushing for Tweek and Cartman because at the time he just had a haircut which made him look just like Tweek. But he wanted Laser Bomb Thunder Driver Air Force One, I think. We ended up settling on that one, but then we never teamed again. Because what happened is we were teamed up just for that one show because they needed a team to wrestle Quicksilver and Generico, and it ended up being such a good match, and the chemistry between me and Sabin was so good that they decided we were going to be a team. So we cut a promo for the DVD saying we were going to choose our name, and we ended up choosing Laser Bomb Thunder Driver Air Force One. And then Sabin was off for a couple shows. I went to Japan, and while I was gone, he formed Motor City Machine Guns with Shelley, and then never came back to the Laser Bomb Thunder Driver Air Force One.
So you were really one of the original Motor City Machine Guns, is what you're telling me.
I believe the only reason that team exists is for me. Sure.
Oh, interesting.
Deal with that.
I
feel a little betrayed, I'll be honest. I've always wondered what would have happened if we had stuck to that team. Probably nothing, and then, you know, nothing would have changed in the entire world. But I always liked teaming with Saban that one time, so it's a shame.
It wouldn't be a question from Dr. Keith if we didn't get this. So since you are Canadian, thoughts on Degrassi Junior High, since it's his favorite show?
I never watched it because I'm French.
Ah.
I was born, I'm French-Canadian. I was born into a French household, and that's an English show.
I only picked
up English, believe it or not, when I was fourth grade about, from watching Jim Ross on Monday Night Raw. Like,
awesome.
I've told this story.
So you had an Oklahoma twang to your English then?
Kind of. I told this to Sean Davari, who's good friends with Jim Ross, and he told Jim Ross this. I learned English from Jim Ross, and, like, I remember when I was, because I knew English, and I could understand English for years, but then I only started really speaking it when I started wrestling at IWS, because that was a mainly English company. And a lot of the guys thought it was hilarious that in my everyday vocabulary would be slobber knocker and stuff like that. Because to me, that's the English I would hear. So I didn't know any better that this was just Jim Ross talking crazy shit. I just thought that was part of the how you talk, you know? So yeah, Jim Ross taught me English.
That's awesome. And let's see. We asked you about he asked about Giant Tiger, but you've already given your thoughts on him.
Right.
Have you ever wanted to train people?
Yes. Actually, I'm taking steps towards making that happen. I don't want to open a wrestling school or anything like that, just because I don't have a ring and I don't have a venue for that, and it's just too much time to dedicate to. But I've recently announced in the local like wrestling scene here in Montreal that I would start doing wrestling seminars, and people could come to them, and I'd do them every month or so. I'm starting next month, where somebody was gracious enough to offer me their ring and their venue to do this, and I think I have something to offer, especially to local wrestlers, because here the thing about Quebec wrestling is, and this was the case too before me and Generico broke out, it almost feels like we're completely closed off from the rest of the wrestling world, maybe because, Quebec's a French province. And also there's just, you know, when you think of good wrestling, you don't necessarily think of Quebec. So a lot of the guys here who have potential don't get to be seen, and don't get to work with guys that are better than them, which in turn they don't get to improve, because I truly think that that's the best way to improve. And Generico and I caught a huge break and got lucky and got to, you know, have a career where we've wrestled countless guys that are better than us and learn from every day. And every time we wrestle, we get to learn from somebody. And the guys here don't get that chance. So I'm going to try to offer them that chance, because I might not be the most technically sound wrestler out there, but I've listened to everybody and I've asked advice from everyone I've ever wrestled. And I've gained a lot of, you know, what to do and what not to do from all the years I spent wrestling in the States. And I think a lot of people here could benefit from that. So I definitely want to train people. And, you know, once I call it quits for good, I don't know when that will be, but that's probably something I'm going to try to do a lot more and dedicate more time to.
Well, Kevin, I think that's a perfect way to end things. We've hit on pretty much everything. This has been exactly what I wanted. I'm so happy you came on. This was a real honor to interview you, and I'm very, very appreciative.
I'm really happy I got to do this.
No problem at all. And if there's anything you want to plug or talk about that's coming up, now's the time.
Sure. I got a website now, steenwrestling.com. It's not very updated now because with everything that was going on with Final Battle, my mind is kind of blank on wrestling right now. So, if you go on there, it kind of looks like time stood still, and it's not, it's still December 15. But after the new year and after the holidays are passed, I'm going to get back on really making that website relevant. And Daniel Mitchell from the UK is helping me out with it, and I want to thank him. And, just go on steamwrestling.com.
Your Twitter.
There's merch there. And, yeah, the Twitter.
The Twitter is amazing.
Kill Steam Kill. And if I have news, that's where you're going to get it from me. And keep supporting indie wrestling and keep supporting Ring of Honor, even if I'm not there. And, if you want me back, tell them. And support PWG, because...
Buy the DVD with the Tozawa match.
Definitely, please. I
think it's on pre. It's on
now.
Pre-order now, so everyone hit up PWG's website and get that, because I know I will be. But Kevin, this is great. Thanks so much for coming on. We're gonna make it a free show, so as many people as possible can hear it, and not just
great.
Subscribers. And this was tremendous. And I'll talk to you again soon, buddy.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
No problem.